Hi, this is John Williams. You're about to hear the Mincing Rascals podcast. Before we do, I just want you to consider sailing on the most luxurious ship ever built with my wife, Brenda, and me. It's the brand new Regent Seven Seas Explorer, and we're going to go on a cruise with WGN and Mincing Rascals listeners April 28th of next year. This ship has the largest rooms and largest suite balconies at sea. It's intimate. There's only 750 passengers on the boat, but there are 9 different ways to dine. So it feels luxurious, and yet by cruise ship standards, it's kind of small. And next spring in April, we're going to go from Barcelona to Rome. We'll be in Spain and France and Italy. It's 8 glorious nights. And these cruises we do with Kelly Cruises are all-inclusive. So once you get on the ship, you literally do not need so much as a nickel. The shore excursions we take are included. The tips, all gratuities, are included. Wine, spirits, even if you want premium liquor or none at all, that's all included. The travel experts at Kelly Cruises really know how to make this fun. And we have a lot of repeat travelers, which tells me and maybe you that you really do get to know us and we all really do have a fun time together. If you can book by June 30th, there are significant savings, including a $500 per suite shipboard credit. So not only do you not need money, we give you money to spend in the spa or the store. Call Kelly Cruises right now, 630-990-1111, 630-990-1111, or visit kellycruises.com. And here we go. Today is Friday. It's June 9th, 2017, and the time is 9:10 in the morning. This is John Williams, and you're listening to Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this are broadcast on my Saturday morning show at 11:10 on WGN.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and the host, co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Mark Baser. I'm the host of the interview show on WTTW, which airs on Fridays at 7:30 and other times at 3 in the morning.
Too bad for you.
I'm Eric Zorn, the fuzzy columnist from the Tribune. I write Wednesday,
Friday, and Sunday.
So, Eric, you've sort of started that. You said you are the fuzzy columnist for the Chicago Tribune. At one point in James Comey's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, he said, there's no fuzz on that, to say explicitly and clearly that something was true. In this case, that the Russians had interfered with the election, or at least tried to. Eric, what was your take on Comey's testimony?
I love that expression. I love that word, fuzzy. But anyway, I think that the basic thrust of his testimony was damaging to Donald Trump, that he called him a liar. And he said that he fired him because of the investigation into Russia, and that he intimated that although he's not under investigation now, he certainly could be under investigation later. Donald Trump tweeted this morning that he'd been totally vindicated by Comey's testimony. I don't understand that tweet at all. Another one of Trump's tweets.
He also said that Comey's the leaker.
Right.
And his lawyer suggested that he should now be investigated.
So let me just talk about that for half a second, which is like you can't leak your own document.
Right.
I mean, it's
right.
It's not a leak. He disclosed it. There was a document. It was a note that he took of conversations with Donald Trump, which is not a confidential document. And rather than give it directly to the media, he gave it to a friend to give to the media, which is kind of a weird thing to do. But it's not leaking. Leaking is when you take something that's not supposed to be public and make it public. This is just a strange backdoor way of getting
it. And my favorite takeaway of all is, Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
I hope there are tapes. That would be awesome.
Yeah, but what do you make of the optics of the way he released that? I mean, if this is a guy who's trying to build credibility, he's trying to make his case because it's going to be him against the president, say, and then he's doing this sort of bizarre sneak leak, I'll say that, Eric, to the New York Times. What do you make of that, Scott?
Yeah, you're right. The optics are terrible, and they're a little odd. But there's a lot of oddness about this testimony, frankly, and Eric wrote about it this morning. Part of it is that when you come forward and say, I didn't have the courage to, you know, to tell the president, I can't do that.
And it wasn't just once. It wasn't just like out of the blue and hit him. It happened, what, two or three times where he said, I was just stunned.
And he had 9 conversations with the president, according to his testimony. I think a couple of them were routine, normal things, but there were several occasions where he should have just said to the president, like, no, that's inappropriate. That's
he was so deferential. Works. Mark, I was amazed at how deferential throughout his short relationship with the president, the FBI director then was. He, rather than tell him, hey, you're full of it and I can't do this and that's wrong, which he had every right to do, he was sort of deferring to the office of the president.
So this is an area where I'm confused because I don't understand. I still will never understand why the FBI director reports to the president, can be fired by the president, but is also independent. I understand that he needs to be independent or he or she needs to be independent. I also understand that he or she needs a boss. But they're obviously, we're seeing right now that that is a there is a conflict there.
Do you have a solution to that? Yeah, who should be the boss? Who should hire and fire the FBI?
Well, that
director?
Would be a perfect example of fuzzy.
Yeah,
because it is. You're right. He's independent, but not. He's under the auspices of the Justice Department, which is under the auspices of the executive branch of the government. And so all the things that happened seem to be not out of the ordinary.
Well, if you remember, he's a 10-year term.
Right.
FBI director is a 10-year term, and that's to avoid the situation that we had with J. Edgar Hoover, who basically had a lifetime appointment as director of the FBI and was a sinister presence, many people feel, for a long time, that he had too much power and that there was a sense that you know he was holding things over people and had...
Right. If you remember, and the listeners, the J. Edgar Hoover was in there for life because he had a file on everybody right. and everybody's weaknesses and peccadilloes and all the other things that we humans do.
So the ten year term kind of, in some ways, it's like a nice compromise. It basically says, you know, you're in for 10 years. That means you're going to serve at least 2 presidents, and unless you commit some, I mean, the understanding is
well, that that's what it should be.
But it means nothing ultimately in a case like this where he did nothing that warranted being fired other than the fact that he can be fired for no reason.
Right, and they ginned up that memo saying because he treated Hillary Clinton so shabbily.
But about the issue of obstruction of justice, they're saying I'm completely exonerated. And another way to look at this is that you asked him to look the other way on the Michael Flynn stuff. He didn't. You fired him. So to say that there was no action, you know, to simply say, I hope, for instance, that you can help me out on the Michael Flynn thing, and then nothing happened isn't true. In fact, then you fired the guy because he didn't do it.
Well, yeah, and there was that odd moment where it was James Risch, the senator from Idaho, was questioning Comey, saying, well, he just said he hoped. He didn't actually ask you to do it. He just said he hoped, which was just an appalling
and it was
deliberate
early.
Misunderstanding of what that means. When you've got the president of the United States saying, I hope that you can. Well, you know, oh, come on. You know, that's leaning on him really hard.
It's the definition of what is, you know.
It was a perfect example of that.
Does this rise to obstruction of justice? I don't think there's prosecutable. Is that? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Probably
you think,
not.
What do you think, Mark? I mean, which way did the needle go? Who won Comey's testimony?
Well, Comey won Comey's testimony. I mean, I wish if I ever get fired from a job that I get to testify before Congress about how bad the boss was.
No, seriously, if the needle is Trump or
Comey
it's pointing closer
won,
to Comey.
But I agree with Scott that I don't know that there's a case for obstruction of justice based on that. I mean, and also for an impeachment thing, it doesn't even matter at this point. He's going nowhere.
Well, let me throw it out here. He said the president is a liar, okay? You would think that would be damning coming from someone like... no, 2/3 of Americans think this president is a liar. So this is not news or surprising to anybody. I mean, 2/3 of the people who support him think he lies.
That's a shocking statistic that only 2/3
he
to me.
Does.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I mean, you can like the guy, but he's a liar.
Yeah, the verb shouldn't be think he's a liar. Know he's a liar.
Well, yesterday I Googled Trump lies ranked to see if somebody
was
keeping score. Nobody actually has done that, but there's certainly a litany of Trump lies. If you go back to Barack Obama's a Muslim or Barack Obama's not born in the United States.
Or his first marriage vows.
BuzzFeed has a good list.
We don't even need to go there.
Of all his lies since he became president.
And it really is kind of a fascinating, harrowing thing. So at the end, if you say, okay, who do you trust, Donald Trump or James Comey, that ought to be pretty easy to sort of ascertain. Trump only has a history of lying. He lied on the campaign trail. He's lied about from the very first day, his inauguration crowd, all the way through the Barack Obama wiretapped me, which sort of got some of this stuff rolling. He has a history of not telling the truth.
I buy the argument that the reason why ultimately Trump fired Comey was just the loyalty thing. He doesn't understand it, perhaps, that that's not the way it works, but that's the way he rolls.
That's what Paul Ryan said. He's new to the job. He didn't know.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Demand
too. That's why you elect somebody who's not as new to these things.
Learning on the job, yeah. No, it struck me as a bad day for Trump because he comes out, you know, looking like a liar compared to Comey, who does seem like a straight shooter, despite, you know, no matter what you might think of how he handled the Hillary Clinton case. I do feel like it was this strange attempt to be honest. I had problems with what he said and when he said it then, but I have no problem with his honesty. I have no doubt in his honesty.
So you, like Mark, agree the needle was on Comey's side on this one, but maybe the issue is, how damaging was this to the president? I don't think it was that damaging.
Right. I don't think it was that damaging. I would agree with that.
Can I ask you a question, though? Is that allowed, or you just ask the question?
That's right. Edit that out.
Edit that out.
I have two questions.
Loyalty,
my first question, and then you can ask it. We can edit it out, and you can re-ask it if it's a good question.
I'll steal it. Yeah,
that's right. Was it a good day for the country? Like, was it a good day in terms of institutions working? That's been the talk the
whole
time.
Okay, everybody answer that, yes or no?
Yes, it was a good day for the
absolutely
country.
Absolutely it was.
Truth is always a great day for this country.
I thought the senators all behaved themselves with civility, with intelligence, with integrity. I mean, with the exception of John McCain, who just wasn't tracking. He's an old man. God bless him. But I thought I was impressed with the process.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Because the whole talk the last few months has been that institutions are crumbling. Can they withstand them? Withstand what's going on? And I was like, this is us
mature.
Work, the government working.
Yeah, there's a little too much partisanship in the questioning, I thought. I mean, both, you know, when the Democrats came, you knew what they were going to say. And I watched the whole thing, and I was reviewing it, and I was writing my column to see, you know, who was holding his feet to the fire in certain things. And basically it was the Republicans were trying to create this sort of reasonable explanations for what Trump said and did, and the Democrats were trying to attack it. But the fact that you were basically alternating, right, going back and forth, I think Angus King screwed up the rotation a little bit, but it was to go back and forth. And by the end of that, was it 2.5 hours? You really got a good sense of what Comey had to say and what the various responsible people in the party were thinking about it. I thought it was a wonderful day for the country.
One takeaway, and it's very minor, but Marco Rubio, little Marco, was becoming an apologist for the Trump administration, probably more so than a senator you mentioned from Idaho.
Rish.
His line of questioning was strangely pro-Trump, which, given what Trump did to him in the primary, I would not be kind to
I gave him props, though, because one of his big questions was, how is it that everything has leaked except the fact that three times, in fact, Comey told the president he's not under investigation? That would have been a very pro-Donald Trump thing. That did not leak out that way. And Rubio was just throwing up his hand saying, isn't that an interesting fact? And I think for what it is, that's an appropriate observation.
I think because only Comey and Trump knew that. And Trump had, quote unquote, leaked it. I mean, by that time, he'd said.
He tweeted it.
He put it in his. No, I don't know if he tweeted it, but he certainly put it in his
everything.
Note. He put it in his note to Comey, the note where he fired him.
Oh, right.
So that was out there. So you can't say that it wasn't out there, just that Comey hadn't confirmed it yet.
Well, but that's it. I mean, so you have this thing from Donald Trump, and we're all looking askance at that, going, oh, Trump, oh, you wait, Comey's going to get his day, and he's going to shoot that thing down. There was no plus given to that the whole time.
I admit that I thought that was wrong. But Comey hadn't said anything either way. He'd leaked that, or he'd given out that one memo to somebody to pass around. But you know, only Comey could have said that, and so since Comey hadn't said it, nobody knew it.
Okay, so the pursuit of truth and the institution of the Senate committee, good. Thumbs up that day. What was your next question?
Well, the other thing that it's a question, and I'm also fascinated by, that Comey came right out and said, I believe, that one of the main reasons why he put out the information at the end of the campaign that Hillary's new emails, or I guess they were old emails, ultimately were back under investigation was because of the tarmac meeting that Bill Clinton had with
Loretta Lynch.
That's incredible to me. Like, that Bill Clinton might have completely screwed the election.
Here, you thought this was Anthony Weiner's fault if you were looking for some tangent to screw everything up.
Frosty dinners at Chappaqua these days,
And what is that also? Why? Why would that be the – because he wanted to talk about the independence of the Justice Department. But and I understand that he's under the auspices of the Justice Department. But he wouldn't be held responsible for that. He's on the FBI side.
James Comey. Yeah. So why did he feel like he had to speak out about it? What is your answer to that?
I don't
question?
Know. I was confused by it.
Yeah. I think he's he's glib. I mean, in a way, don't you think? The way he wrote his memo, Comey, I thought it was dramatic. It, you know, was fascinating reading, and I thought he knew it. And I think he loves. I got the sense that he loves to spin the narrative, that he loves this yarn, even though he hates his role in it. And he's inserting himself where he doesn't need to.
One thing I noticed about the way he answered questions is he would almost always answer yes or no. Someone would ask him a direct question, and he would usually say yes, and then he would explain it. He wouldn't back into it by saying, well, and he had, so that really gave him the appearance.
Yes. I love that, of
being direct. So, I mean, I thought that he sounded really trustworthy because of the way he delivered his answers. I did not think he was glib. That didn't come off at all. He didn't come off as – he took it seriously. He seemed to answer every question, tried to answer every question as best as he could. And
didn't come off as evasive at all.
No, not at all. I mean, when he couldn't answer a question or wanted to be evasive, he just said, I can't answer that.
Well, that was – you know, and really, what is this whole thing about? But in the one time he was evasive, he said he had to be. He couldn't answer this in an open setting is, let's not take our eye off the ball. Do you think the Russians meddled in the election? And there's a pause, and he said, I can't answer that in a public meeting.
No. He said for sure the Russians meddled in the election.
Yeah, no, you're right.
The question is whether there was this collusion.
Was there collusion between the Trump campaign?
Right. And he also said that New York Times story
was bogus.
Was mostly bogus.
Yeah, February one.
That's where Trump says he's vindicated.
And the New York Times is pushing back on that hard.
Yeah, I didn't see the response to that, but I wondered how they were going to handle that.
They said, well, there's, yes. I mean, they've come back. They've got a piece this morning where they're just basically saying, no, I mean, that they still say they've got a number of sources and they're standing by the story. And we will see, won't we?
Yeah, I thought about that afterwards. Comey doesn't get to be the ultimate decider, but his opinion's more valuable than mine on the veracity of a story about his department,
right?
He would know.
And one of the things I think is really important about this is that, yes, Trump is not under investigation, but nobody is under investigation until they are, right? I mean, you know, it's like this story is developing. Mueller is pouring over everything. Trump could easily become the target of this investigation.
Well put, Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. This is John Williams. At this point in our Mincing Rascals podcast recording, we ran into a technical snafu. And so we jump from there to the close of the podcast. You're getting an amended version this week. I like to think of it as a relief. We go to our Mincing Rascals podcast recommendations, something the gang is seeing, reading, watching, listening to, or consuming. Eric, you go first. What do you like this week?
Well, I like this weekend the Tribune Printers Row Lit Fest. I'm going to be there on Sunday at 10 and at noon doing a couple things that are interesting. Check out that schedule. Also, I'm recommending the Up First podcast on NPR. It's a news update that posts by 5 a.m. here every morning. Headlines, newsmaker interviews, lets you know what you missed overnight.
How about you, Mark Bezier?
I will be emceeing the Bronco All-Star Game for 11 and 12-year-olds this weekend in Oak Park. I also want to recommend...
Is that true, by the way?
That is true. I also want to recommend...
How much fun is that when your kids are playing a sport like that? Isn't that just the most fun
I love
fun
making
thing?
Fun of each kid as they get up to the plate, except for my own. I'd like to recommend Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk. It's a novel by a local novelist, but she lives here. She's not a local novelist. Kathleen Rooney. It's a wonderful book about an 80-year-old woman who used to be a big star in the advertising world in New York in the 1930s, and time has kind of passed her by, and she walks through New York and is surprisingly modern in her thinking, even though the world has forgotten her. Lillian Boxfish takes
a
walk.
This is a true story or not a true story?
It's kind of based on a real woman, but it's totally a fictional book.
Yeah, but there was a lady who was a marquee in the advertising business.
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
It's great.
And the name of the book is?
Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk.
How about you, Scott Stannis? What do you like?
I'm taking a walk this weekend. So I just want to throw that out there. And but collective eye roll here because this is such an old show. But my wife and I fell in love with Frasier when it first aired. And we've been binge watching. It's 11 seasons. We're finally coming to the end. And it is so funny, so smart. It dares to be intelligent humor, which especially then was kind of rare in sitcoms. And so it's just been a delight to rediscover it. And so Mark and I, just before we recorded this, we're talking about a former episode that was one of the many episodes that are just hilarious.
Better than Cheers? It's up there, right?
When these things are rated, they always put Cheers ahead of Frasier. I disagree. I think Frasier is a little smarter. It's not, you know, up your nose with a rubber hose kind of humor that I think Cheers tended to have. I just love something that's not afraid to be smart.
Matthew Perry said this week in an interview that he lies awake at night worried that if they ever did a Friends reunion, nobody would care. What's your thought about that? If they did a Friends reunion, would you watch? Would you be up for it?
I didn't watch it when it was on.
So you wouldn't be there for
I wouldn't
that.
Care.
Would you be up for a Friends reunion?
No.
I would, and I didn't watch it. But I think
really?
Yeah, I know. Go figure that out. But I was reading this going, well, I think it would really be fun to see who they are and what this happened to them, and do they have kids, or do they get married, or I don't know what happens. But I just think I would be there for that more than I am for a rerun today.
That's the eternal struggle with fiction. Because authors, especially in books, they'll say, it doesn't matter what happens. These people aren't real. But yet, we as viewers or readers do always want to kind of know. We want to suspend our disbelief and think
are
real.
Well, my recommendation is a book that is out by a guy named Trey Radel. You may recognize that name, but probably not. He was a one-term Tea Party conservative from Florida who was in the Congress with John Boehner and the rest of them. He's written a book about his congressional experience. He was a talk show host. He was a TV journalist in Florida. And like a lot of them, he rose to politics and got elected. His book is called Democrazy. It's the true story of weird politics, money, madness, and finger food. He's a guy who liked to party, eat, drink, and do cocaine. He was kicked out of Congress. He was not reelected, but he was arrested. In fact, he said he was like the only member of the United States Congress to be arrested for cocaine while in office. But he talks so he says I had a substance abuse problem. So did my mom, and he's very candid about it. But what's really, I think, interesting is how he describes what it's like if you walk in the door, you're a first-term congressman, you don't know how anything works. Kind of like Donald Trump. And he talks about trying to get a bill passed, something rudimentary, you know, and about sheep shearing and how we got to cut back the subsidies because we can't afford it. You could see some freshman congressman getting on his soapbox about that. And how that actually wasn't as easy to do as he thought, and all of the embarrassing lessons he learned along the way, and how ultimately that led to his undoing. It's a really interesting story about how Congress works and doesn't.
Did he learn nothing from ABC Rocks? You know, I'm just a bill from Capitol Hill. I'm going to stop there.
What's he doing now, other than writing a book?
Yeah, that and touring. And what else is he doing? Let me just turn to the flap here. It says previously worked as, previously, and he lives in Florida with his wife and child in Fort Myers, Florida.
Do they have a lot of sheep in Florida? I mean, why the sheep shearing thing?
Well, that's it because that's why he was able to do this. They don't have sheep in Florida. So as a guy who's just said, we need to cut fat, and his staff said, hey, you're a freshman congressman, you got to find something to do. There's $50 million in the farm bill that goes to sheep shearing subsidies. You could get in front of that as a fiscal conservative, and there's no blowback because ain't no sheep in Florida. So he says, okay, and he introduces the bill, and it goes great. And then somebody, as he says, I rise in objection to my colleague. And it's a Democrat senator from Texas where they do have sheep. And then they go at it about sheep shearing subsidies. And it becomes fascinating just as a sort of microcosm of how bills get debated and how money gets appropriated.
He sounds a little like Jonah Ryan on Veep.
Now in Congress, yeah, right. That one, right? The one who's bald.
Yeah.
I find myself watching Veep now. I couldn't used to watch it. Now I do. And oh my God, is it... it's good. It doesn't alarm me like some people are alarmed by Veep these days because they say Veep is too close to the truth. Yeah. But I don't know. For me, I'm out of a mindset right now where Veep seems to work better than it did previously. You still watch it, don't you?
It's the second funniest show to Frasier.
And that concludes this week's Mincing Rascals. Eric Zorn, thanks for joining us. Mark Baser, nice to have you in the mix. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate
Scott Stanis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Elif Garris is the producer of the Mincing Rascals. This is John Williams, and we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.